Welcome to the How the Why. With John Barrett Ingalls. Exploring and celebrating the creative process and the creative purpose of authors, editors, and artists that make up and inspire the Black Hill Press family. Black Hill Press is dedicated to the novella. We believe a great story is never defined by its length. Let's get creative.
Hello, and welcome to the How, the Why, brought to you by Black Hill Press. I'm John Barrett Ingalls, and today we are connected with Brent Cunningham, the Operations Director at Small Press Distribution. Brent, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's good to be here, John Barrett.
So let's start off by talking about SPD and telling all of our multitude of listeners exactly what SPD is and how they got their start.
Sure, I'd be happy to. The so Small Press Distribution, commonly known as SPD, it's been around. I guess we're creeping up on 50 years now.
Wow.
We are the nation's only nonprofit book distributor, at least the only one we're aware of. We're certainly the only book distributor specializing in literary material that's also a nonprofit. But I think we're probably the only one. And we have a really unique and I think really special mission. I often, you know, we have our technical mission, but I kind of tend to describe it as, you know, SPD operates as an umbrella for 400 very small, one-person kind of operation literary presses. Many of them do only poetry. Some of them do poetry and fiction. Some of them do only fiction, a little bit of literary nonfiction. And we are their distributor. Our job is to kind of get them out in the world and folks who, you know, really are doing this as out of love and as a day job, publishing wonderful material. We warehouse the books. We represent them. We try to provide all the services of a standard, much larger book distributor.
Just for reference, as a distributor, for if you were to look at like big mainstream, would that be Amazon?
No, Amazon would be a retailer. Very loosely, I guess you could say. So there's the majors, you know, the five or six large corporate-y, now corporate-owned publishers, you know, based in New York, the Simon & Schuster's and the Random House.
And so forth. Yeah.
And those
are
folks,
publishers with they're
publishers.
They publish and distribute.
That's right. They're so large that really the distribution function is tucked inside of them. And below that level, I usually call the next level sort of independent presses. And that publisher might have a staff of, you know, 4 to 12. They might be bringing out a couple dozen to 50 to 80 books a year. And they're taking a salary as well. But usually, even at that size, they need an official book distributor. The best known one for literary presses is Consortium. Publishers Group West, now they and Consortium are both underneath a company called Perseus. And at that level, these are very large business enterprises. They're not as large as the majors, but the distributors are fairly significant. And there's at least a couple dozen other for-profit distributors, all of them, you know, larger than SPD, and really specializing in presses that where whatever they publish, they can move, you know, enough units, 1,000, 2,000, 4,000 copies of each book, to kind of make the numbers work. And the problem with that model is that there's a lot of great literary material that doesn't necessarily fit that economic model, but in our view still deserves to have a chance to reach the marketplace, to get to bookstores and to libraries. It's very, very hard for a small publisher to get into bookstores and sell into libraries without a book distributor. Those entities don't generally just buy from a small producer of material.
So that was the impetus for the company back in the late 60s or early 70s?
Well, yes, sort of. I mean, so 68 or so were founded. The two folks who founded us back in the day, one's named Jack Shoemaker. He later went on to found North Point Press and now is at Counterpoint Press, quite well-known, marvelous person in the publishing industry. And Peter Howard, who passed away a couple years ago. He was ran Serendipity Books. He was sort of one of truly the probably the great rare bookseller of specifically literary material. And I think at the time you're talking about, you know, a dozen, two dozen very tiny presses. They're kind of born in my senses out of that spirit of the 60s that people can do for themselves. And
and you're Northern California, you're like,
yep,
like City
Berkeley.
Light Book. Yeah, so there was a movement of literature that was happening, or that
absolutely
had happened at that time.
Yeah, there's the mimeograph revolution. It's kind of the first, you know, it's similar to a DIY kind of spirit. It rhymes very much with the 60s. Forget those, you know, commercialized corporate publishers. We're just going to do this ourselves. Mm. And through the 70s, that's kind of what it is. It's just a very small warehouse, or really I think it's out of Peter's, you know, back of Peter's store. And they're making little catalogs, and they're centralizing those books to some degree. But I think I've seen some catalogs from the 70s, and you're talking about, you know, two, three dozen publishers rather than the 400 that we have today. By the 1980s, it's still kind of a similarly small enterprise, but those catalogs from the 80s and the general operation, I mean, they're really sort of the source for, I guess you could say, more experimental poetry. And a lifeline, I think, for a lot of folks. You know, I know that people my age in their mid-40s probably say this too much, but I like to remind people there was no internet
right
at the time. So really, you know, if you were a writer and passionate about the art form and wanted to stay in touch with a lot of these small productions, then quite often your only way was to become aware of SPD, and it certainly helped keep some kind of connection
in
that network.
Before the internet, was it just getting the small press publications into bookstores, or how were things distributed at that time?
Well, that's right. I mean, it was, I think it, SPD has always operated on two different levels, in that we do sell, and it's absolutely central to our mission to sell into bookstores and libraries. But we also, unlike the for-profit distributors, you can go to our website and buy a book directly as an individual. It's not a good business model for the for-profit distributors to do that, but SPD's just as much about the mission of staying connected directly to those readers and creating a community of readers for this material. So, you know, back then there was a lot of individual direct sales, and we still have a lot of individual direct sales. And so it was kind of a mix. It's certainly true that then and now, you know, like I said, you couldn't start making books and walk into a bookstore and expect them to buy it. They would say, who's your distributor? But it's also was the case. I'm speaking from personal experience. I mean, in 87, I found out about SPD and started ordering the books, and it really was a way of opening into an awareness of this world of, you know, writers that I think, you know, from the perspective of sort of New York publishing would look very much underground and invisible, but are having a very fervent conversation that was exactly the conversation I wanted to have, and I think that SPD remains, you know, a lot of people's access to realizing there's other like-minded folks interested in poetry, interested in more experimental wing of fiction writing, maybe, and that there's other like-minded souls out there.
Now, how did the growth from, you know, however many, the handful of small press and publishers that you had to the 400, did the company seek out these small presses, or did the publishers, independent publishers, come to you?
Right. Well, mostly SPD still kind of lets, you know, publishers show up on our doorstep. We probably get 6 to 10 applications for distribution every month and only say yes to one or two. There's a lot more publishing activity out in the small press world than most people are aware. It's just an overwhelming amount of material. But I would say that, you know, a number of things happened. Then the maybe the short version of the story would be that there were a lot more sort of smaller independent book distributors and who were for-profit book distributors through the 80s and 90s. And a lot of those winnowed away. It was very tough to make the model work in the midst of a lot of change in the book industry. And SPD is sort of the last one standing at the kind of size that we are. And that was partly because we were a nonprofit and mission-based and support from the NEA and support from a number of marvelous foundations kept us afloat when others weren't. But so that drove a lot of those presses, I think, to us. There was really no other choice at the size that they were. But meanwhile, we've also grown dramatically. We sell an awful lot more books than we sold even 10 years ago. And a lot of that is a function of the internet and digital culture, to be honest. It's a lot easier to get the message out and sort of compete with larger distributors and for small presses to compete with larger presses when the internet sort of levels the playing field in terms of the megaphone that you're using to get the word out.
Yeah, as a distributor, are you also somewhat of a publicist for these smaller presses?
Yeah, I mean, we're a staff of really 10, and really only we have one sales manager and a couple of other employees doing support for sales and marketing, and we see 1,000 new books a year come into the warehouse. So you can do the math. It's not, we can only do so much. The bulk of what we are doing is sort of taking the data of the new books, getting it into, you know, spreadsheets and data feeds, and getting that information out in a clean way to the book industry generally, so that they know what's here. But we do have a lot of marketing programs as well. It's just hard to, we don't take a single book and spend all our time on it the way a larger distributor might, or certainly a, you know, the PR wing of a larger press might. It's mostly up to the presses to run the bulk of their marketing. But you know, we go to trade shows and show the books there. We have emails and faxes, and I think we still have a few faxes and all kinds.
What
of
is that? What is a fax? I don't know what that is.
A fax. you remember when I was talking about the 80s? I guess I'm stuck in the 80s.
So for the 40-some-odd years that the SPD has been around, like, how far does the backlog of content go?
Oh, there's some cobwebby books back there in the warehouse for sure. I mean, the bulk of them, you know, like any book distributor, you know, the focus is front list, you know, for us, for small press, that might mean more the last, you know, 2-3 years, you know. And larger publishers tend to have call their books frontlist for a shorter period of time. You know, they've got a very tiny little marketing window where they're trying to get all the ads and reviews and stuff to hit at the same time. Mm-hmm. Small press material, by its nature, you know, it might take a while for word of mouth to get out. There's not much of a marketing campaign or a lot of money spent on it. And as a result, you can see a book, you know, sort of not sell well for a few months and then suddenly take off. And but in any case, the most of our sales are books that have pub dates of the last 3 years. But we also keep a lot of stuff available from, you know, 10, 15 years ago. A lot of these books are very popular for course adoption to academics, and they might be on syllabi for year after year after year.
Right.
In my experience, a lot of professors really like to teach books that maybe their students aren't going to run into in, you know, in the front table of a Barnes & Noble. They're making maybe a specific argument about literature, and so a lot of times the out-of-the-way title, the small press title, is really fits in with what they're teaching. So we try to keep those available really a lot longer than your average distributor or even major publisher would. There's stuff back there from the early 80s to go back to the 80s. That's for sure. A couple probably from the 70s, but most of the books that really sell are the last 3 years.
I know you do a lot of, it seems but there's the majority of the books that you distribute that are poetry books. Is that just because that's who's reached out to you, or because that's what sells?
Yeah, that's right. I right now, and for a while, it's about 60% of what we sell is poetry, and the other 40% is divvied between fiction and sort of literary nonfiction, letters and essays and so forth. If you go back to the sense that, you know, to get on a for-profit distributor, you've got to reliably move a certain number of units. It's all, you know, it's a business, very much a business. And poetry tends to be the genre that it's very hard to reliably sell 1,000 copies. And you can't really have a conversation with a for-profit distributor if you can't tell them that your last 5 books all sold 1,000 or more, you know. Poetry moves in the hundreds, and as a result, you know, those presses really don't have, in a lot of cases, other options, and so they've ended up centralized here at SPD. There was no particular idea that we would be focused on poetry, but there's certainly the idea, you know, we are a literary distributor, and that's part of the mission.
Right, absolutely. So now that, you know, we're going back to the changing tides of technology, I know that you are starting to release some of your titles on ebook. How has that process been?
That's been interesting. I've been at SPD since 99. I won't even do the math. And to be honest, this is people don't realize it. This is the second big ebook wave. There was another one in like 99, 2000, 2001. A lot of money was poured into it. And it really fizzled until Amazon brought the Kindle out. And
yeah, I was going to say, is that because the technology wasn't really there for, you know, other than reading it on your computer at home?
Right. No, they had ebook reading devices. They were just, I don't know the full story. I know that, you know, we ended up at places they were handing us these devices. I think that, you know, personally, I was like, it was like $375 for the reading device, you know. Some of it was just price points and maybe people weren't ready, or I don't know why it didn't happen at that point, but maybe somebody like Amazon had to get behind it or something. But it was interesting to watch that, because really, when I first started working here in 99, there were people who would say, look, in 2 years there won't be print books, so you need to think about what you're doing with your life. They were entirely wrong. So it was fascinating to see that all these supposed experts were not correct. And I think, you know, there have been a number of articles in the last few months saying, well, print books are not dead at all, and some of the numbers bearing that out. So I think we've gone through a cycle where ebooks are certainly here to stay, but it's also true that I think everyone's starting to accept that they didn't eat into print book sales in quite the same way. So at this point, SPD did have a pilot project. We got funded by the Irvine Foundation to look into ebooks and learned a ton about them and shepherded some of our presses into the process of making ebooks. They sold a little bit, but not dramatically great. And so for the most part, we kind of just give advice and we'll promote the print book and assume that that'll kind of fold over into the ebook and let the press decide how they're going to convert their ebooks and with whom and how they're going to distribute their ebooks.
Right.
So we're still trying to figure out what our role might be, but it's been quite interesting. I mean, we've had double-digit growth of our print book sales for every year for the last 5 years, and doesn't seem to be slowing down at all. So, you know, we didn't see some kind of blip where ebooks suddenly ate into it. And I think that ebooks are just going to be another format you might choose to get the book in, but a lot of this material people preferred in print. The other thing is that, you know, with 60% poetry, the fact is that when the ebook, this round of ebook technology and the previous round were, it's my feeling that the people, when they sat down and started coding it, they didn't have poetry in mind, right?
Right.
They were thinking flowable text, fiction books, and it's still tricky to get, you know, the poem and with some odd line break, or if it's not flush, justified left, the end result could be pretty wonky.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot from different publishers who are trying to figure out how to do that.
It's challenging, you know. Poets in particular seem to have this notion that has been with them since Gutenberg, that that the way you put that poem together, it's going to look like that exactly when the book is published.
Mm-hmm.
And with ebooks, that assumption is not always true, you know. And so much of the ebook is really in the user's hand. They can make the font different. They can, you know, change the size of the font. So things that poets, you know, it might take a while for them to adjust. Well, are you kidding? You can't. I'm not going to let you put my poem in Comic Sans just because you want to, you know. That's a classic poet position.
Yeah, you were talking about how, like, the last 5 years you've noticed a rise in your paper, the actual hard, I don't even know what I'm saying.
Print.
Yeah, the print version of your books. And I was thinking about, you know, everybody, like, Borders fizzled out and Barnes & Noble is slowly on its way because of Amazon. But I feel like there's a rise in a return to the independent bookseller. Have you noticed that there is a rise in the books that you're actually getting out to these smaller bookstores?
I mean, independent stores of sales, for us, they've basically held steady the last 5 years, which is kind of a big victory after pretty much from 99, the point I got here on, they seemed like they were going a tick or two down every year. And I think that what's happened is that, you know, there's a lot of small specialty booksellers. You know, you've got folks like Burroughs Poetry Bookshop in Brooklyn, which I'm pretty sure for a couple of years was just sort of a floating table that would show up places. You know, it's very different from your Borders and Barnes & Noble brick and mortar model. Suddenly you look over to reading and there's the Burroughs Poetry Bookshop. And I think they may have gotten a space now. But those sorts of stores, smaller square footage, very specialized, you know, seem to be something that can be maybe financially sustained in a way that, you know, in the old days, an independent bookstore meant you needed this very large building. And anyway, SPD's material really fits with that kind of notion. There's another one, you know, here in Oakland, E.M. Wolfman Books that just opened, and they have a whole SPD wall because it's the size of a very large walk-in closet, and that model maybe can work. You know, the numbers are entirely different, and so I think that's helped the independent, you know, books, the changing structure and nature of what an independent bookstore is. It might be much smaller. It might not even have it might not even be in a physical space all the time. But it becomes more about that curatorial function that booksellers have always really been needed for and are
right.
still very much needed for today.
And so fact, just lining so, your shelf with thousands of titles, you're actually...
Well, that's the thing, is that the technology, not, you know, not so much e-books, but print-on-demand, which is a, you know, an innovation in printing technology, allows people to print books digitally, through a digital process. What that meant, you know, instead of making plates, which is the old offset method, so the POD printing means that really you and I can come up with the idea today to start a press, and it's not very hard to do. We have to learn a little typesetting, and you know, and that's not terribly difficult. And then you send it off to this POD printer. You don't have to have $3,000 up front to buy the first run. You just print 40 copies and see how it goes. You know, so sort of small grassroots level printing production has meant an explosion in material, which in turn means you kind of need somebody to curate it a little bit and tell you what to read among these 6,000 books.
Well,
or in our case, 10,000 in the warehouse. So.
I also feel like you know, we're at this day and age where everything is a throwback. You know, if you look at a bar scene down here in LA, everything is a classic cocktail, and there's like a new revitalization in vinyl records, and you know, record stores are popping up. And I think the same thing is probably happening with books too, that people are, it's like this 25 to 35 year olds, you know, the hipsters or whatever you call them, are like backlashing against technology and wanting to go back to holding a book in their hand. And
that's right.
Hopefully it continues.
Well, yeah, and that's part of that DIY thing, I guess, or call it what you want. But you know, SPD never really changed that way. I mean, we're pretty similar. It's true we don't have a print catalog anymore, so we're more online, but you can come down to our offices and you'll see that it's pretty authentic. it's not exactly high tech, even though we do, you know, pride ourselves on being able to work with the technology as it exists and exploit it on behalf of our publishers. But I think that, you know, that feeds into also, you know, some of the aesthetics that sort of have tended to be centralized around SPD. In other words, I think there's, you know, it's true it can get to be kind of a hipster thing, but there's also a politics to it. There's a sense that of skepticism towards this sort of techno-utopia that we're being sold by really major corporations sometimes. Mm. People do have a thirst to figure out alternatives and ways to resist that. And a lot of the writers here, a lot of the publishers, I think, are pretty committed to, you know, trying to think out some other structure for culture besides, you know, the one that's offered from sort of the top down.
Force-fed on you. Oh, you need this.
Right.
You can't survive without this thing.
Yeah, I think it's very much, you know, wrapped into the work, which is really why all of us here on staff are here. We care about the writing first, and are actually almost all of, I'd say all of us here are writers, or you wouldn't really be working here at SPD.
Now, I know you also have your own publishing house or press, Hook Press, correct?
I do, yeah. It's a chapbook press that I, you know, it's a side project, but I care about a lot. I tend to put out a chapbook a year or so. Since I had kids, it's slowed down a little bit. But you know, SPD doesn't carry Hook Press, and we tend not to carry any presses that don't have ISBNs and where the books don't have spines. And that's just because it's, you know, much of what we do is to get books into bookstores and libraries, and neither bookstores nor libraries tend to buy, you know, chapbooks and anything without printing on the spine. So there's a kind of lower limit there. But at the same time, there's tremendous, wonderful, you know, passionate stuff being done on the chapbook and micropress level that I care about personally very much. So, yeah, it's
a lot of what you did with Hook Press inspired by working with SPD.
Well, it definitely makes it easier to, you know the ropes of how to run a project like that. I mean, I think it's not terribly difficult to run, in my opinion, to run a small press or chapbook level project and not kind of lose your shirt. But there's a lot to know about it in order to not lose your shirt. And so there's just a lot of intricacies about how you price it and, you know, what the production level and who you're going to get it printed from and how you're going to promote it and market it. And, you know, that if you know that going in, it can help you, you know, at the end, not have lost as much money as you would have on such a project. So I think that part has been really helpful and is really helpful. But it's also just, you know, SPD is my job, but I'm one of the lucky people who's working at a place that's very much connected with my personal life, my own writing, my own, you know, interests. And so it's kind of all one big world to me, I guess.
But I'm sure you're a pretty voracious reader as well, or you'd have to be.
I am. I do like to read. I mean, this many years into it, I've noticed I do read a little more nonfiction than I used to read a lot of poetry. And I don't know, something happened and I started reading more nonfiction. One thing that happens working here, I'll tell you, is that's maybe interesting, is that, you know, I have great awareness of all the small press poetry, but there's a lot of great material done by, you know, major presses and independent presses. But I have so many books here to read that I often seem really out of touch with, you know, sort of major books that have been brought out on large presses. Everyone else has read that book, but I'm meanwhile reading these really out of the way, out of the way books.
No,
or something.
I know all too well about that, man. My entire last year has been spent reading, you know, people from our publishing company and the authors that I'm interviewing. But it's good, you know. It's
healthy. It's definitely a way to proceed. I mean, it's only when I get around, you know, groups of people, I don't know, who, and they say, you know, blah, 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 and I say, who's that? And they're like, they just won the National Book Award, you know, and I'm like, oh, really? Oh, thank you for letting me know. I need to get my Twitter feed working or something.
Well, Brent, we are out of time, unfortunately, but it was a lot of fun talking to you and really informative.
Hey, it's been a delight. I really, we love you guys, the Black Hill people, and love the podcast, and wish you absolutely best of luck, and hope this did inform somebody or other.
It informed me, so that's great.
This has been The How, The Why by Black Hill Press. I'm John Barrett Ingalls. The show was produced by Kevin Stanek and yours truly, with production assistance by Sarah Becker. The music is Mea Lua by Bossa Zuzu. I wanted to thank everybody for your creativity and your inspiration, and to remind you all to keep making art. Thank you.